So I'd like to call the meeting to order. This is UAF Staff Council Meeting Number 280, on April 3rd. Nicole Dufour, would you like to take the roll?
Nate Bauer?
Present.
Samara Tabor?
Present.
Chad Olson? Thanks, Chad. Teresa Corner? Carrie Santoro?
Present.
Brianna Pollan? Beverly Walls?
Here.
Alda Norris? I've got Alda on Google. Joseph Alloway? Jesse Atencio? Rose Bright, and I have an email she won't be present. Sue Mitchell?
Present.
Suzanne Nicolai? Wendy Roop, and I have Wendy online. Thanks, Wendy. Chris Brooks, and I have Chris on Google. Matthew.
Present.
Katie. Katie's online. China. Kathy Nava.
Present.
Susie Fry. We got Susie on Google. John Smelter. Jessica Armstrong?
Present.
Emily Nelson?
Present.
Jenny Campbell for Kara Axe?
Present.
Dina Jala?
Present.
Jessica Allard?
Present.
Kimberly Knudsen? Alexandra Chisholm?
Here.
Lena Krutikoff?
Present.
Janelle Merrifield?
Present.
Amanda Wall?
Here.
Melissa Campbell? Thanks, Melissa. Ella Ray Minor?
Here.
Karina Gonzalez? Anybody whose name I did not call? Quorum was met.
Terrific. Thank you, Nicole. Okay, we have an agenda here for the meeting that Nicole sent out on last Friday. I hope everybody's had a chance to review it. Perhaps you have it in front of you. Would entertain a motion to adopt the agenda.
So moved.
Thank you, Sue. Any second?
Second.
Thank you. Any changes or additions or edits to the agenda?
I would like to propose to discuss the resolution on adding a staff council member that you passed out.
Sure. Thank you. Yeah. Hopefully everybody got a physical copy of that handout. I'm going to send that around, especially for the people online, so that everybody has access to it. But thank you, Jessica. I don't know if we need a second to include that. I have no problem with including that as a discussion item. Would anybody like to second Jessica's motion to add that?
I will second that.
Yeah, okay, thanks. Any objections to that change? I'd like to add that I think appropriate spot is under new business. We can add a B. Okay. So if anybody has a pen and wants to add that in for under the shared governance discussion. It might sync up nicely with that. In fact, it could probably even be a 2 under the Shared Governance Board of Regents item. But anyway, we'll discuss that when we get to it. I can make reference in my officer's report as well. Okay, any other revisions or additions to our agenda?
Yes, please.
Yes.
I'd like to add on a new business a chance to speak on a staff health care committee need for input. Ophelia, and if I want to talk about it more than once, I'll fill you in at that point.
Okay. I'm open to that. Any seconds for Leslie's addition?
Second thought.
Thank you. Any objections? All right. That will be added under new business as well. Anything else? Okay. Hearing no other additions, we have an agenda. We also have our minutes from our last meeting. Hopefully people have had a chance to review those. I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes from 279.
So moved.
Thank you, Sue. Second. Thanks, Steve. Okay, so we have minutes from last meeting. And as far as the Green Dot Minute, safety minute, of course, people know the emergency exit is just out these doors and to the left. People are familiar with the Wood Center. I would also just mention for some of us, it's a great time of year. You know, it's sunny out. Things are breaking up. It's slushy. The color of the snow is changing, which is always a signal, I think, that we're headed toward a different time of year. I think it's also, I'm conscious that the conditions affect people in different ways, and I think for some people it can be a challenge. So I would encourage you to be supportive and aware and conscious of the support services that are available to us. Just kind of keep an eye out and be supportive of your colleagues around you. Seasonal change affects people in different ways. So I just encourage people to keep that in mind. So with that, we do have a guest speaker here, and I'm conscious of her schedule. So if nobody objects, I would like to move. We're past 9 o'clock already, so I'd like to move directly to public comment, and we'll take up our pending actions after Michelle. So Michelle Bartlett from Summer Sessions is sharing some time with us, and I think she has some handouts and some things she'd like to say. So thanks, Michelle, for being here.
Thank you, Nate. Thanks, Mara, for inviting me. I wish I could sing and dance like Liza Minnelli. And what I brought for you is sort of a preview of what's coming in the community guide that we do for summer. And as she would sing, start spreading the news. So we're gonna pass these around, and then we'll talk about it so you can sort of follow. What I'd like to say is that with what's happening at the university, not only now when we have challenging economic times, is you, all of us, because I'm staff too, we're the ones that make it work. Okay? We're the ones that have our feet on the ground, talking to people on a daily basis. And it's wonderful educational programming that we create throughout the campus and the research. It's great. But you are the connection. You're the connection to our public. Our public are our students. Our public is the Fairbanks community. And one of the things that we have held here in summer sessions is to realize that anybody who comes in contact with us is our, quote, customer. And we want them to keep coming back. We want them to feel ownership of this campus. Because only with us getting their support will we be able to move forward. Okay. Last one's around. Okay.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but Nicole, do you see the messages on that?
I do, guys. I apologize. We tested this on Friday. I didn't work in. I apologize. Thank you.
Okay. So summer session started registration last Monday in February. We have about 200 courses. These are face-to-face courses, and these are also some of them are allowing for video conferencing. Some of them are allowed for audio conferencing. So for not all of the classes are on a face-to-face basis. So we're getting sort of flexible out there. E-learning runs its own programs and its own courses, which is separate from summer. So does CTC. All right. I know it can be really confusing, especially for students who are the ones that this was all created for. But summer classes are face-to-face or some audio and video conferencing. We have some unique things to offer students in terms of financial aid, because with Pell Grants, the Pell Grants are distributed in the fall, and if there's any money left for the summer, then they can be applied to summer classes. But I have yet to run into a student who had any money left over by summertime. It was not there. So we created different things. One is we eliminated out-of-state tuition. Second thing we did was create tuition awards for Pell Grant kids, incoming or continuing students. If you run out of money and you have a 2.5 grade point average and you want to take a core course in the summertime, as long as it's required for your degree, the only thing we ask is that you get a 2.5. You pass it with a C or better. You don't pass it with a C or better, it's sort of like a bank loan from a car. You have to pay it back. We have those for undergraduate as well as graduate students. We also have the sweet summer deal. That means if you take more than 10 courses, up to 14 credits, and you pass all of them with a C or better, you get, you only have to pay for 10. Why are we doing all of this? Well, the reason is, as you know, that the average graduation rate at UAF is 6 years. And when I walk into a class and I say, how long should a four-year degree take? You know, it's four, but our students have to work. And so we're trying to figure out how to encourage them to come in summer so that, in fact, they can graduate in 4 years. We have two scholarships, $500 scholarships, one in for Lashina Jones and her grandparents, the Balcoms, who Lashina was a student here. She was working for the physical plant when she collapsed and died about 8 years ago, and a scholarship was created in her name. Those of you who are familiar with Joseph Thompson, he was a wonderful teacher, I mean, amazing teacher, and we didn't want him to be forgotten, so we have a $500 scholarship for him. Okay, any questions about the financial aid? If you know students who need it, tell them that money is available, that they can work and go to school at the same time. And if they want to work, go to school at the same time, have them come literally directly to me, and I'll work with them to find a job on campus. All right, we're going to go to the next page, which is called Alaska Dreaming. Alaska Dreaming is a program that we have created to encourage students from outside to come up for the summer. Okay. If students come up from outside and take 6 credits or more, we will buy their plane ticket from Seattle. Okay? Where does the money come from to pay a ticket, which you might ask? I can tell you it comes from the tuition they pay, because otherwise they wouldn't be coming. So, for example, for a 6-credit course they pay $1,200 for, which we wouldn't get because they wouldn't come, then only $403 to $400 goes to the plane ticket. Okay? So we get them coming to Alaska, try it, you'll love it. That's the idea. Come on up. And in addition to the students that have come up so far, some of them take more than 6 credits, and they found it, and we actually made, summer session made money on it. I don't know whether you are aware of this, but summer session gets no general fund money. Zero. As a matter of fact, we're expected to give money back to the university. All right, so it's a wonderful balancing act, and we really enjoy the challenge. As we were talking about challenge, it's just another challenge. Okay, that's it. Anybody have any questions about Alaska Dreaming? One of the things that I was committed to doing when I came on board was to make sure that the public would come and feel ownership of this campus. And to that extent, in the summertime, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, there are free activities on campus every evening. The first one, which you see, is down memory lane. This is a new one. And actually, the chancellor suggested this to me. This is bringing Ameritide back to campus to talk about what it was like when they came. And Bill Mendenhall, who's probably the oldest vertical person in Fairbanks, came in 1955. And so we're going to have him there along with Larry Bennett, and it'll be Charlie Rose. Anybody watch Charlie Rose? This is a Charlie Rose kind of evening where Robert Hannon will be interviewing them and we'll be recording them. It's all tied into the 100th anniversary. Tuesday night is the Healthy Living Lecture Series, which we've done, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now. Members of the medical and allied medical field come and make give presentations so that we all can live a better life, a longer life, a fitter life. And we do this in cooperation with the Tenma Clinic, as well as the hospital has been very supportive. Wednesday night is Discover Alaska Lecture Series, and those are different people from different walks of life sharing their Alaska with them. What we did this year was we invited people like the superintendent of Denali National Park is going to be speaking one night, Don Stryker, as is Greg Dudgeon, who's the superintendent of Gates of the Arctic in Utah Charlie. Doug Shiragi, John Monahan. Anyway, you can see the people that we have invited. The last two are at Murie. The first one down memory lane will be in the LV Auditorium. These guys are popular, but the music in the garden on Thursday night, I'm telling you, with 200 to 300 people show up every Thursday night and out on the lawn, drink dinner, spread out, enjoy. Kids can run around. It's not a problem. And we just enjoy live music looking at the Alaska rain. It's rain or shine, it happens. All right? It's amazing when it's raining, pouring, how many people show up. And then you don't have to sit. We put it in the shelter. Okay, that's it. Kids Day Camp. We've been doing Kids Day Camp now for a number of years, but they've been continually expanding. This year we have 36 different day camps, okay, with slots for 647 individual slots. As of this morning, 419 of them were taken, okay, but there are still openings, which is just a real wide variety. We have kids going to second and third grade, kids going to fourth, fifth, and sixth, and then kids going into seventh and eighth. We've divided it, and for those people who a three-hour camp either in the morning or the afternoon is really a bummer, especially if you're working. We have a supervised lunch in between, so you could actually have a seven-hour block, which is a little bit more palatable. So we really appreciate the people who are willing to teach, and there a lot of them, most of them are from our own faculty, so we're very grateful for that. Any questions about camp? Any camp for the kids? The last one that you have is the Really Free Market, which will be coming up on the 20th of May. This is something, it's an annual event. We've been doing it for I don't know how many years, but a lot. And it's this wide open thing. As you all know, you bring stuff, and this is a time of the year where we're kind of looking at all of our closets and saying, where did it all come from? If you can hold off and taking it down the dump, the transfer station, we would appreciate you considering putting it in a box, putting it somewhere, and then coming out on the 20th of May, dropping it off between 8 and 10, and then the market opens. And we advertise this to all the nonprofits in town to get it out to their clientele. That being said, anybody can come. I remember Dave Veazey having his eye on the toilet one day and just showing up and putting his hands on it because he was doing a construction project. So anybody can help themselves. We're not looking for card-carrying people who are on Medicaid. We're not doing that. It's just like anybody's welcome to come and take something that they need. It's free cycling, and it's really at its finest. And as I've often said, there's enough stuff in Fairbanks that some of it is just in the wrong houses. One more thing. We like to feel like we are responsive, but we don't have a lock on all good ideas. So if there's something that Summer Sessions might consider doing, I would be welcome to the conversation. Welcome you to contact me to the conversation. Okay. Oh, one other thing. We don't have a flyer on it. The garden, the Georgetown Botanical Garden, is open for business this summer. What does that mean? It means if you know of somebody who would like to host a wedding there, a children's party, a reunion there, the space can be reserved and rented. And this is another way of creating a revenue stream so that the garden can continue to exist. Okay? Thank you.
Thanks very much, Michelle. Yeah. Appreciate your time. Okay, we're up on 9:20 now, and so if nobody objects, we have Office of Management and Budget here, and they have expressed willingness and enthusiasm about coming to speak to us about a couple issues, budget issues. So thanks.
Good morning. Thanks, Dave. It's always nice to hear enthusiasm surrounding budget as a topic. So for those of you that don't know me, my name is Julie Queen, and I'm the Director of the Office of Management and Budget at UAS, and I'm also moonlighting these days as the Interim Associate Vice Chancellor for Financial Services. And to my left is Brianna Walters. She's our Senior Budget Analyst in OMB, and we'll kind of be trading off here on some of the topics. We thank you very much in advance when Nicole contacted us, asking for a budget update for this group. We also asked her if you had specific questions that you wanted addressed, and so she did send a few to us in advance, and that's how we sent out some of the items in the packet. So I'll let Brianna walk you through the documents that you have in front of you or online, and then we'll kind of work through the material. We have about 20 minutes, and so certainly we will try to move through things fairly quickly, but if there are questions over any particular area, we'll spend more time where folks feel like they want it. Okay, so we sent in advance 4 documents. So the first one is the FY16 at a glance. So it shows our budget picture, revenues, and expenditures. So I'll go over that piece first in a moment. The other item that you have is a legislative timeline, sort of an overview that Julie will touch on later. We also have slides from Chancellor Thomas's budget forum that was on March 21st. It's fairly recent. If you were able to attend or view it from the web, that was a recent sort of budget overview at that time. And then the final set of slides we have are summaries from FY14 to FY16 about cuts and where they were taken in certain areas. So we won't go over that specifically. It's a little bit old now at this point, but it gives you an idea of where cuts have been taken. So I think the first item we'll go over is the FY16 at a glance. So generally, we always hand this out because people can usually ask better questions when they understand what components make up the budget. And oftentimes you'll hear in the grand scheme or when people talk about the UAF budget or even the UA budget, you'll hear people say, oh, we're almost a $1 billion budget at a UA level. Well, the UAF piece of that is about $434 million. But of course, within that pie, there's a wedge that's the general fund portion that's the state allocation. And so that's why we hand this sheet out in general, is to give people a sense of what are all the moving parts and how do these parts push and pull against each other. And so I'll let Brianna touch a bit on that. So for FY16, when you look at the revenue side, the largest component of our revenue sources are the state general funds. That's about, consists of about 40% of our budget, and that wedge has decreased over the past couple of years. In FY15, it consisted of 42% of our budget, so it is shrinking. And we're making that up in other ways
from the federal receipt side to some extent. That slice is slightly growing compared to prior years, as well as tuition fees to a tiny degree. It used to be about 9% of our budget, and now it's about 10% of our budget. So that's an area where we have some control through tuition increases over time, so that in the future could potentially become a slightly larger piece of the pie. Auxiliary receipts and transfers is about $60 million. So those consist of our housing, dining, and bookstore revenue sources, as well as any interagency receipts anytime we charge each other internally or we have facilities work orders, things of that nature. Recharges are in there as well. And then receipts and partnerships in the green section is about $37 million. And that's all of our grants and contracts, mainly coming from any external sources. It also includes any special event revenue or museum admissions or sales, any other miscellaneous type of items. So this is where our slices are changing slightly. So our general fund is shrinking, but we can make it up in other ways. But the piece of the pie is just shrinking over time. It's smaller.
Yeah, so generally it's interesting because in the last few years we've said repeatedly, you know, the GF is about 40% of the budget. It's about 40% of the budget. Well, over time the pie has also shrunk, and so we thought we would start to see that changing as tuition was expected to go up and GF was expected to come down. But as the pie itself is changing shape, the proportion of GF has stayed about the same over the last few years. And so we haven't seen the percentages change that much. Another good rule of thumb, so generally when you hear the president say things like, we would like to see a 5% tuition increase, in UA terms, it's basically, that equates to about $1 million per percent across the UA system. And so that's sort of, you know, the quick and dirty math. And so then of that pie, so if we were to see a $5 million tuition increase equivalent to 5%, UAF usually sees about a third of that. So we're just, our student credit, our generation is about a third across the system. Anchorage, of course, is the bulk. And so when you do the quick math, then that means roughly $335,000 per every percent tuition rate increase. But of course, the uncertainty side of that is the enrollment factor. And so not knowing as much what enrollment will do, UAF in the last few years has actually done an excellent job with its recruiting and retention efforts. And we had stayed stable or even had increases where other campuses were declining. This has been the first year where UAF then saw a dip in its enrollment as well. And so, I mean, we're working really hard to keep that stable, certainly, rather than a decline. But when we get out of this trough with enrollment, which is what we expect, at some point the level of high school graduates are expected to go up and other environmental factors are expected to change, every time we see a percentage increase in enrollment, that also has a significant impact on that tuition revenue, which bumps it back up. So just wanted to give you some of that quick math so that when you hear in the UA context these things and it gets put out in the system-wide messages, you can always try to calculate that back to know what that means at UAF.
So on the expenditure side, you can see that salaries and benefits make up also the bulk of our budget. And so we've separated it out here to show the unrestricted versus the restricted portion. So again, when we are looking at cuts, those sponsored salaries and benefits really aren't an area where we would cut because they're funded from external sources and not from state general funds.
So that's grants. Grants, contracts, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. The other change that we will be seeing in the expenditure side, so again, the proportions have been similar over the years as far as how much money we're spending in each category. It's just that the pie is becoming smaller. But in the debts and transfers area in the orange section, we are seeing that go up because of CHP, and it will continue to increase slightly too for engineering in the future. So the debt that we're paying on the CHP and engineering building. So those are, we'll see that proportion exceed $20 million in the next couple of years. Are there any questions on the revenue or expense side? Okay. And so again, on the one quick note, so just because this was a hot issue within the legislative context in the last few years, travel. So travel has continued to decrease. It used to be in the $14 million range in the last couple of years. Now it's about 11 in FY16. And the restricted side of that, about $8 million or so, has stayed fairly consistent. The side that's the general fund or unrestricted side has come down, where we're being very conscious about when we travel and why. And I think for the most part, some of the rural areas maybe have experienced less travel from that, which I think is a negative thing. That is something that when we scrutinize travel, that's harder to accomplish travel to rural areas. But for the most part, things that were dubbed administrative travel have certainly been reduced, but I feel like in this category, we're still focusing on academic-focused travel, and so people are still traveling for those reasons. It's just thinner in general. And so it hasn't come up so much this year. Travel kind of had its heyday last year and was heavily scrutinized. What I will say is that the restricted side, which is the $8 million, I would never expect our travel to be less than that unless we started seeing fewer grants and contracts to support that type of effort. And so that's something also to keep in the back of the brain, that when you see a number that looks big, like $11 million, well, about 8 of it is paid for by sponsors. And so it's good to know how thin we are on the other side of the coin. So just for reference.
Mm-hmm.
I'll quickly touch on the legislative timeline as well. So for the most part, I wish I had the magic answer that would tell us that we have less uncertainty today than we did earlier when the session started. We really still don't, although the session has been working through. It's made its way through the House where we saw a flat budget, operating budget come out of the House, which we're very supportive of, because even in a flat budget context, that still internally feels like a reduction for UAS because we're covering other unfunded fixed costs. The Senate has proposed a 5% cut budget, this is GS terms, which calculates to, or it feels like more of a, closer to, what are we, close to 9% internal impact on the minus 5% scenario. So again, the rule of thumb is almost always to double whatever you hear. If it's flat, it's minus 5, and if it's minus 5, it's close to minus 10. And so that internal fixed cost factor is pretty major for UAF. And we should, I think at this point, there's advocacy happening and people are talking to their legislators, which we always encourage, outside of UA-sponsored email traffic and all those things. If people want to advocate for the university budget, we certainly love that people do that and are well-informed when they go into those advocacy two-minute sessions to, or if you write your legislator, that's always a great thing, as long as it's outside of the UA context. And from your feelings as an individual constituent. We should see the conference committee budget come out in April, which we're hoping that when the House says flat and the Senate says minus 5, that we see something that's a compromise budget between the two, that we would love to be closer to flat. And so we're working hard to advocate for that and provide reasons why minus 5 is very detrimental to UAF and UA. But then, after that happens, there's still a high level of uncertainty with what actually comes out in final in the May or June timeframe. There's so many things still left on the legislative agenda. It's hard to say that we think that they're even going to finish on time at this point. And then how this works is once this budget works through the legislative side, the governor, at the end of the day, has the last ability to review the budget. And the governor can't add anything back in. He can only veto.
which is unfortunate because the governor's been a very big supporter of the university and higher education in Alaska in general. And so once we see the budget come out for governor's review, at that point, it's very close to final unless he line item vetoes anything, which did happen last year when we saw a $10 million decrease at the end of the budget cycle as they were trying to work through compromise with the legislative body over some of the things around the dividend. And so we'll see what happens this year, but we're really hoping to see something closer to flat. So that's the timeline. I will say the Senate has pushed very firmly on seeing a 5% this year, a 4% next year, and a line of 3% the year after. They have been focused on the four biggest budgets within the state context, and so the agency budgets, which is corrections, health and social services, K-12, and the University of Alaska. Those are the big four, and so that's where the Senate has focused most of its energy toward cuts. But whether or not that's going to get traction remains to be seen. So outside of that, I would encourage folks to read the Capitol report that comes out. Miles Baker, the AVP for Government Relations at the System Office, sends those in a fairly regular interval. And the Alumni Association also does a really great job of letting people know where they can speak up and where they can get engaged if they have feedback on the UA budget. Any questions on the legislative side? Sure.
Hi, Julie. Thank you. I just have a quick question. I heard something about in the Senate them wanting to take money away from the university and put it into a pre-K program in the public schools so that school wouldn't start at kindergarten, it would actually start at pre-kindergarten. Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't.
Okay.
No, and
it didn't seem to me to be a really appropriate use of funding to take away from the university and put budget money into stuff that maybe the federal government's already doing through Head Start and programs like that. So.
Yeah, no, I hadn't heard anything at that level of detail at this point, but I have no doubt there are many things being discussed that sometimes make sense and sometimes may not. There's all sorts of ideas out there, but I hadn't heard that one, so thanks for sharing. Something to keep an eye on. Okay. Well, the last two items, for those that attended the budget forum, it's something you may have seen before. We just included it because it was the most recent budget handout that the chancellor had shared in public forum, and so it was useful here. And as Brianna mentioned, the other one that was included was historical. The two questions that staff council asked us to address were how can staff learn about some of the budget cuts, and so that's why we wanted to share one of the older presentation that gave an overview of the 14 to 16. Of course, this is from a high-level perspective. I think it was probably shared with the president, staff, or board at some point, and so it stays at that level. But we would encourage folks to certainly attend the forums, you know, read your cornerstone, read the Capitol report where you can, speak with your leadership, deans and directors, and VCs. If you know your PVC member, planning and budget committee member, you're certainly able to also reach out to that group. And certainly, just like now, if you have questions, we're happy to come or even do email updates periodically on things that we hear on the budget. Budget in general is such a big, broad topic. It's always helpful to know if you have some specific questions that we can help answer. That's usually the best way for us to get you information. There's also no mention, it may have been touched on here today, strategic pathway forums that the president is having in the next couple days at the Fairbanks campus to go through, so I think it's the skinnied down version of the things, the options presented in pathways round two. And so definitely staying plugged in on some of those things as well. Whether or not those will have a
a cost savings as a result. I think it remains to be seen as some of the implementations are identified and we work through what those options are going to be. But it is always good to know what's moving, because what that will tell you is, well, if this function changes or if somebody else is going to, the work will, you know, move to a lead campus or be centralized or statewide or whatever the options are, that will have impact on other areas that you utilize that service or function. And so it's good to know what's moving, because there are dependencies on those things that you won't be more familiar with, you know, in your work. I know that's how I feel usually about it is, okay, well, what will this mean if this changes? The other question you asked us, items, are there any items that won't change? And I think at this point, the items that we know internally won't change are our debt service obligations, the things that we know that we've penciled in as the fixed cost line item. There, we know that we don't expect to see a compensation increase for staff this year for unrepresented staff. That's something that UA has told us throughout the course of this year. And we're hearing at the state levels ideas percolating about you know, whether or not they do staff increases or they do a freeze for the next couple of years. We don't know what the state's going to do on that yet, but we know internally, you know, we're not expecting anything on the staff side. Outside of that, there are a few things like utilities and then maintenance, facilities maintenance costs. Those, we've plugged them into the fixed cost category, but they do vary. So, I mean, if we have a warm winter and utilities costs are a little bit lower because people aren't plugged in as much or we don't have to heat the campus as warm, those things we can also back off. And then that's when we look at that money annually every year as part of the Chancellor's strategic reallocation internally and go, okay, did we meet our fixed cost obligations? Do we have any money left over to shore up any other budgetary holes within the UAF context? So even though we call those fixed costs, they're mostly fixed, but they change based on the season and things like that. So I would say that those are close to being fixed, but they bobble a little bit based on the actual whatever happened. So I wanted to cover those are the two things that I heard in advance. If there are any other questions that you had, this is quick, but
budget.
Try to get as much information out to the group as we possibly can in a short amount of time.
Any questions? Somebody online? Well, I want to express my thanks to you and Brianna. We appreciate your time. And the Office of Management and Budget has been a terrific resource for staff council, I think, over the last few years in terms of giving us some vocabulary and flattening the playing field in terms of understanding about some of these very important issues. And I would second what Julie had to say about if people feel inclined to advocate on behalf of the university, that can go a long way.
Absolutely. And if you are planning to and you feel like you ever need any facts and things that will help support your argument, certainly feel free to email and ask. We can always make sure people are armed with the correct information whenever they're going to speak. Even from their personal point of view, it's best to know that you have numbers in your pocket that are legit so that you know, the case is stronger, however you feel you want to represent it. So. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Okay. Great. Well, we're up on 9:40, 9:45. So, Chris, thanks for being here. Chris, the President-elect from Faculty Senate. We'd like to offer him some time to give us an update about what's at the top of their priority list.
Thanks, Nate. Thank you for this opportunity. Also, thank you for excising all the AV demons before the Faculty Senate meeting this afternoon, just like last month. I'll keep my remarks pretty short. We have a really packed agenda today at Faculty Senate. I mean, this happens every year, as the committees push all their business forward. But in particular, President Johnson will be speaking for about 25 minutes this afternoon. And so it'll be an opportunity to ask him some of the tough questions about, for example, why he does or does not support, say, the inclusion of a faculty or staff regent on the Board of Regents, or what is Strategic Pathways doing to help deal with the acute budget problems that we have at the university. Because as you know, that most of the really tough decisions right now are being made at the campus and unit level for dealing with a lot of these budget problems. As far as Senate goes, we do have a resolution in support of the faculty or staff regions and a lot of other curricular stuff this afternoon that may or may not be of interest. Also, the chancellor search is progressing. I'm particularly interested in that, and so those interviews for the finalist candidates are taking place all day today, so I expect some news about that shortly. And that's about all I have for today. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Do you know about what time President Johnson will be speaking?
Let's see, the meeting starts at 1, and I believe he's scheduled for around 1:30. So it's in the first half of the meeting. We deliberately put him early in the meeting. So we kind of expect that to run long.
Any other questions for Chris? Thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right. I don't see Colby here, we'll go ahead and circle back to some of the things that we had to kind of jump over with, to respect our guest time. The first thing is we should address our pending actions. Item 2A, our resolution regarding changes in furlough policy regulation. This again, there haven't been any changes since our last meeting. I regret that. It was on the agenda at the last Staff Alliance meeting, but it got bumped because of time. So we have another Staff Alliance meeting on Wednesday. That's first on our agenda, and I fully expect it to get full support from Staff Alliance. Of course, I can't guarantee anything, but in my discussions with other members of Staff Alliance, I don't think that there's any objection to the good work and thoughtful approach to furlough policy that came here from Staff Council. So there will be updates on that this week. Any questions about that? Okay, great. Then item B, we do have an update about Staff Volunteer Day proposal. Jenny, thanks for being here on behalf of Kara. Kara and Samara and I and Michelle Bartlett were in a meeting last week regarding Volunteer Day, which the Chancellor, I think that we've spoken about this before here, the Chancellor supports in concept. I handed out a response from him. Late last week, he signed our proposal to him, his proposal on behalf of our Volunteer Day with modifications, and I think those modifications are captured well in his response. And so the gist of those is that he would like, and his I think he's representing the sort of collective opinion of his core cabinet, he would like to concentrate staff volunteer efforts as much as possible. And so he's proposed a revision, from a week designation to a single day in each semester. And I think that's the largest change. And then we also made some, we had some conversation about how the beneficiaries or the partners, I guess is a better word, volunteer organizations around our communities would be determined. Selected. We talked about potentially coming up with a list. I don't think that we made any I don't think that there's anything in there that designates any specifics about that process, but I think it's on the front of his mind, and I think that he's eager to work with us, with our advocacy committee in particular, to come up with a process for determining what those partner organizations might be. From the perspective of, I think the chancellor made a good point that, you know, if it's just any volunteer organization and staff persons, if I just have the option to select any group in town, then the efforts could be spread a little thin, at least at the beginning. And so to concentrate our efforts, both in terms of time and in terms of location, I think is very important. Because the university, I view this, and I think the university does too, as an opportunity to really show off the kind of good work and good people that we have here. So, yeah, is it?
I think you captured it, yeah. I think the chancellor was really happy to sign him with this forward. He was really supportive to our feedback, everything that he said. He said, I'm really open, push back if I'm out of line. He just kind of wanted to condense, I think, that our efforts in a way that would make a larger impact to the community. But in terms of setting up what day we do it and what organization we serve, he left that up to our group, our staff council. So. And then does it say anything there about Michelle's support? It does. Yeah, so Michelle Bartlett will be the one kind of helping us advertise and be like a dedicated staff member to get the word out about the day.
Yeah, I'm really thrilled about that. I think that Michelle, she had to leave, but I think that on behalf of summer sessions and other kind of initiatives that she's led or been a part of here at the university, I think she's really terrific, and I'm glad to have her step forward and help us with this, because I think that she's just done a lot of terrific work on behalf of the university, and I think that she's a great resource. Just personally, I want to say, as we kind of approach the end of our staff council year, that this means this effort. Means a lot. It has meant a lot to me personally. Leslie and I think that we have been working on this for a number of years, and it's been an ongoing process. There are some reasons why it hasn't happened as quickly as we kind of hoped, but you know, including transitions in leadership and that sort of thing. But I really feel I'm grateful to Chancellor Thomas for making this a focus, especially over the last month or two, and I expect that we're actually going to see some traction, some results, and I think that he is eager to put that kind of energy and resources, frankly, behind it that we've kind of been looking for a while. So I'm glad about it. And thanks to the advocacy committee and to Kara in particular for continuing to push on this at a time where I think it needed it.
We have one thing planned. It's not a staff day, but we are going to do a food drive to help the summer kids. We have to get that up and running here in the next month, but I've got a list from the food bank of items that they're looking for donations, so look for more information on that fairly soon. And if you can't do the items, they're going to set us up a link on the food bank webpage where the university staff can go specifically donate funds to go towards that particular program.
And you know, it's a good point, and it's something that that Dana raised in the meeting last week too. That that this volunteer day, as a concentration of volunteerism and energy and effort on our part, can also then be used as a way to more generally highlight a lot of other volunteer activities and benefits that the university staff provide to the community, connections that are formed between our network of people here and the networks that we have throughout our campus, community surveys, and other campuses around the UAL network. I think that's great. Just in regard to this specific document that the Chancellor has provided us, I don't think that that's anything that we need to vote on or establish official support for those changes, but I am eager to have a conversation if people have any questions or issues about that. I guess personally, I don't have any problem with the changes that the Chancellor has suggested, but I do want to have I do want to approach it in an open way. So does anybody have any questions or? If you do, if you have more time to think about it in the interim. Between now and May, please just email me or let us know. Thanks very much. Okay, officers' reports. I'm going to be brief because most of the things that I would like to address are covered elsewhere in the agenda. But I do want to talk about the Chancellor's search for a little bit. As Chris mentioned, the interviews for our candidates, we have 10 candidates for the chancellor position. We had interviews all day yesterday. Interviews are occurring all day today. I'm taking a break from them for this meeting. But I would say that I'm heartened by our list of candidates and by the interviews that have already occurred. Our hope is to debrief at the end of today and to have at least our preliminary list of finalist candidates, which I expect will be three or four by the end of today, and to seek them out for on-campus visits and forums. Those that were around this time last year will remember that we had a series of open forums with governance group, hosted by the governance groups, but they were open to anybody. And we helped to facilitate those, and we also saw active participation from our constituencies. So that's, I think, the general approach this time. Of course, we don't have a vendor, a consultant to kind of govern that process, but from my perspective, it's gone very smooth and very well so far. And so those forums, I think the idea is for those to occur, schedule dependent at the end of April, that last week in April, I think, maybe the week of the 24th or after. And so there's still a target date of July 1st for the hire. I don't think that has changed. Keep that time period in mind for those forums, because again, I think that for us to have a voice at those regarding the finalist candidates toward the end of this month, I think will be very important as an impact. Any questions about that? I would reiterate that the other major change between last year's process and this year's is there's an increased focus on candidates' experience with and within the state of Alaska, and especially the University of Alaska system and UAF. Okay. That's all I have. Sorry.
I'll also be brief. I wanted to let the group know that Jane Grosskloss has stepped down from staff council, as many of us, she's just finding it a little bit too much of an extra heavy load for her. And so I want to point out that Jessica Allard, in our last meeting, offered to co-chair staff alliance and has now since graciously stepped into the role as chair of that committee. So thank you, Jessica, and that's not exactly what you signed up for, but I hope you feel supported by all of us. You're doing a great job. And then sort of on that note, also during pre-staff with Chancellor Thomas and Vice Chancellor Burrell, I mentioned that I will not be running for re-election in May due to similar conflicts and just finding it really hard to make the time. And so we had a conversation about, I think that a lot of us are feeling that. We very much want to engage with staff council. It's a really positive thing that we want to opt in for, but are having difficulty finding time. And it isn't necessarily because our supervisors don't support it. It's just if you're already working overtime, it's hard to find that extra hour to work on your committee report. So we can have a conversation about it, or you can email me. Kari was just concerned. Well, they were both concerned about that and what to do about it. And Kari asked me to type something up about it to just sort of summarize those that have left and the reasons they've left. So if you have any ideas of ways that we could be supported by the Chancellor and by Chancellor Burrell, they're very open to that. I haven't thought of anything yet. I think we're all just very busy. So does anyone have anything off the top? Comes down. Okay. Well, please send me an email if you think of anything, just even your personal experience. Yeah.
I was going to say, I think an argument with at least my supervisors would be if there were a little bit of funding available to cover part of our time, even a week of our time over the year would just be a token sort of a gesture from us.
Yeah, I think that's a fair argument too. Nate and I both think that staff council is one of the best development opportunities offered to staff at this time. So if we can't afford to be sent to conferences, at the very least, you know, I'll definitely include that in my remarks. Anything else on that topic? I just want to add that the Vice Chancellor for Student Services search, I don't have any updates. I'm not sure. I haven't heard back from Alex Fitz yet. She said she'd let us know. And I think the only other thing I wanted to add, I brought this up at exec board. It's a small thing, but for those that have laptops up, there's a website, uaf.edu/chancellor/highlights. And it's sort of the name, when you go to the website, it's a little deceiving. It says Board of Regents Biweekly Highlights. And it says this report is generated by the UA Board of Regents on a biweekly basis. But when you click into them, it has these really great highlights of things going on at UAF. And it's pretty comprehensive. So in terms of giving your group's updates outside of staff council stuff that's going on, it's just very good. And I've never seen it before. Maybe some of you are familiar with it, but I wasn't. I was poking around looking for something else. And I thought, wow, this is a really great resource. I should look at this every week. It's updated very regularly. So,
a question on that. My public information officer said that she's tried to get on that email list, and she has asked several times and not been added. Who is the best person to ask?
You know, Jessica, that's a good question because it only recently started being sent around. I think it was an effort by Staff Alliance to get I think it's Brandy Berg on behalf of the Board of Regents to send that out widely. The person that collects them from UAF is Carla Browning, so she might be a good person to reach out to if you want to get it. And she may also be, I don't have it in front of me right now, but she may also be the source of the email to UAF folks.
Thank you. Yeah, she is, and I made the same request to get added to that list and eventually succeeded. And there's an email address, I want to say something like UAF Highlights or something like that, that you can send highlights to, and it's done every other week on the off-pay period week, so the week after pay period. So yeah, I'd encourage anybody who wants to get your unit's information on there to send it in there. I'm not sure about that email address, but Carla Browning is the one who collects that.
That's all I have, unless anyone has any questions for me. Thank you.
Thanks, Laura. So I propose, it's 10 o'clock, I propose taking our break and coming back, and then we have a few things to dig into after that, including a discussion about shared governance and board regions. Okay? Any objections? All right. 10 minutes. Okay, thanks. Chancellor Thomas is here. We appreciate his time. I'd like to jump forward and give him a chance to highlight a few things for us. So thanks, Chancellor Thomas.
Good morning. So, Julie, can you hear the mic? A little soft.
Mic should be turned off.
Is that any better? No?
I'll figure out which mic it is.
try that one? Okay, that one's working. Well, I've got just a handful of things to say this morning. So the first thing is good morning. Welcome to the start of a new week. Springtime is almost here. Sun's coming out. Water's running down the streets. Right? A time for optimism, and yet the legislature's in session. Right? All right. So is what it is. There's a few things I'll address today. Some I'm going to skip. So one that I'm going to skip is the chancellor search update, because your leader here serves on that committee, and he can speak to it more knowledgeably than I can. So if you're wondering why I didn't address that, it's because the expertise is someplace else at the moment. Okay. So I want to come to the budget. If you, whether or not you went to the budget forum, UIF is working on two budget targets right now that have come out of the legislature and or governor. One would result in a 5.8% reduction at UIF. That is what's commonly referred to as the flat budget, strangely enough. It's a reduction because of fixed cost increases and UI statewide internal reallocations. And then the Senate part of the legislature has proposed an additional 5% reduction. That would end up being a 9.4% reduction to UIF. So those are the two targets that are currently being worked. We've reached out across the institution and asked for what those proposals would be to how we would get to those reductions. And everyone should know that those are simply targets at this time. And as we get further along in that process, perhaps later this month, early the next month, I'll have another forum to put some specific things up for conversation as to how we might intend to meet those targets. Okay? So we're still working that process. I want you to know that we are looking at those two scales of reductions at this time, not knowing for sure where we will end up. And I will remind you all, it's a continuing process. Each spring we go through this. We have to wait for the legislature to finish its business, and then, of course, the governor to sign off, because the governor has veto authority as well. And so it is it's a process. We've got to let it play out, but we have to prepare for those potential outcomes, either a flat legislative funding or a minus 5%. Those are the two on the table right now, so that's what we're preparing for. A couple of things on strategic pathways. If you haven't been following that, there's been a little bit of a shift in the timeline. First of all, there are phase two discussions. You may recall that the president promised to come back and visit after he gave his initial thoughts to the board about which of the options for phase two. Those meetings have been announced. They're all open meetings. And they're occurring tomorrow and the next day, so Tuesday and Wednesday. And so I believe the Cornerstone listed all of those meetings. So if you have an interest in any of those, please plan on coming to those that you're particularly interested in. Remember, there are eight areas under phase two. A little bit of shift in the timeline on the decisions. The president has proposed to only putting a couple of those areas up for decision at the June board meeting. Earlier, he had discussed making decisions in all eight areas then, but his most recent indications are that he would only seek approval for fisheries and institutional research, and then he would spend the summer getting a little bit more information about the other six areas and have proposals for the board at the September meeting. On phase three, we have another collection of areas, and we would have, I believe, the readouts on those areas occur to the summit team on April 11th, so that will be the soonest I will see them. I haven't seen any of that yet. And then probably on the 12th, all of those options would be posted to the web, and we could start receiving input on those. The president plans once again to hold a first round of meetings at each institution on each of those areas, much as he did for phase two, and form thoughts, and he may very well give some initial thoughts on those to the board at the June meeting, further discussion at September, but decisions not likely until the November meeting. So everything's getting pushed back a little bit so that there's more time for input and discussion. And so I wanted you to hear that bit of a time shift. The original plan, if you may recall, was all of these decisions would be finished by June of this year. And so things have been shifted back some, and I wanted you to be aware of that change. Other than that, I have just a number of date announcements and reminders. One is that April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. I want to make sure that you're all familiar with that. There is a National Day of Action on Sexual Assault. That is scheduled for tomorrow. I wanted to make sure that you knew about that. And there will be booths here at the Wood Center from 11 to 2. And up at there will be an event up at the Moore Bartlett Scarland Complex 4 to 6 p.m. tomorrow. So I wanted to make you aware of those opportunities to take part in that. May 3rd is the university's centennial date. In 1917, that is when Territorial Governor Strong signed the charter for the university. And so we're going to reenact that on May 3rd this year. On May 6th, which is a Saturday, is commencement. Remember, commencement has normally been on a Sunday. It's on a Saturday this year, a bit of a shift. And then May 7th through 12th is the week of the Arctic, and we will have quite a few dignitaries both here on the Fairbanks campus and down at the Carlson Center. So that will be a very active week. There are community activities. There's scientific lectures. There's all kinds of things. So make sure that you, if you haven't seen the listing of those activities, some of which include children, for instance, that you may want to have a look at those and make sure that those are well known both within your units and, of course, by your all of our constituents across the Fairbanks area. The Alaska Native Studies Conference starts this Friday. There's a pre-conference component that starts Friday. The official start of that conference is Saturday morning, so I wanted to make sure you knew that that was going on this week. And then, of course, as we get into the summer, I want to remind you that there are two major construction projects coming, and Jenny's here. She can speak more knowledgeably about these if you have questions. One of those is the Wood Center roof. The iconic copper roof will be replaced with something that is more long-lasting, if you will, and has greater insulated value. So those are that's a major construction project. There'll be a large crane set up, and Wood Center will actually be closed for a few days to help accomplish that. So I want to make sure that you're aware of that. And then the ceiling in the Great Hall will be replaced this summer, and that will cause disruption to that unit. I want to make you aware of those. And then finally, I met with, was it Friday? I met with members of your the committee that you had working on the staff volunteer days, and we had a conversation, and I signed off on your proposal for UAF staff volunteer days with some modifications, and I put those modifications in writing, and I look forward to your feedback on that, and I'm sure those will be broadly distributed and be happy to take that. That's been a long time coming. I'm very happy to help move this forward. I think it's a great idea, and look forward to seeing how that gets well established at the institution over time. So with that, I'll take any questions that you might have. Oh, I guess one more thing. The president is giving a talk at the Faculty Senate this afternoon, and that will start, I think the Senate starts at 1. His talk is roughly, will start somewhere between 1:20 and 1:30. And so, you know, I encourage you, if you want to see what's the latest on his mind with regard to budget and strategic pathways and various elements of higher education in the state, I encourage you to come and listen to that. Any questions?
Yeah, questions for the Chancellor.
I did have a quick question. I can't help my mic on, that's okay. It just has to do with kind of advocacy. I did attend your budget forum you had the last week, I want to say. I don't really remember weeks these days. But the it had a question of, like, advocacy. Like, if somebody is wanting to advocate for, like, a certain position or a certain department or things like that, it seems kind of a little bit like people weren't sure if that was the right platform to kind of be talking about the small, specific kind of budget positions, and in kind of that larger forum, both the discussion was on, like, broader topics, and some right towards the end, people were kind of starting to talk about kind of specific positions and whether or not it would be appropriate to advocate those things to you, if they can do it anonymously, if they should be advocating it to their vice chancellors. Does that make sense? It just didn't seem clear.
Good question. Certainly, there should be a discussion at the vice chancellor level, but I'm happy to receive it as well. Questions related to that can come either directly or via the Grapevine site, so that those are all good possibilities.
So, the other group is a contact. They have a planning budget, and they're very broad, and almost as a website. So that's another possibility. So it has to do with the comfort level. Who will come talk to for sharing lots of it? You certainly heard a lot of that at that budget forum, right? One thing I will say is when you go through budgeting above the 34 and has a nice thing to court, we tend to circle up the rocks, right? And that's really the group that needs that attention by the state. I have plenty of money, but how we're choosing to use what those revenue costs. So we could redirect some of that energy that's focused on the other legislature. And it doesn't come for individual people or own thoughts on whether you're in favor of taxes, in favor of going to something, all of that, right? Those are individual decisions I want to put in my own direction. But that's where the largest portion of attention should fall, right? So what is the right revenue and what is the right level of compensation? That's all special practice. Now, the university has to respond to the options that have to be come back to the end. It's very difficult, I guess. One equivalent may or may not occur, as the main side already fixed. I said the reflection we have taken date are twice the general fund allocation itself. It's like eliminating two UA South people already on the bus, but that's pretty shocking. So, setting priorities within the institution, we have to work to our mission, right? What are our priorities going to be? Basically, we're reserved to say we are down to. But particularly knowledge that you need to take further steps. So one of the choices to the choices last year has to be by far a bigger reduction because so it'll be definitely crushed. Even with a flat budget, you know, because of fixed cost, it's all part of the conversation. We do need the input, you know, I know that you know Rupert, various units spoke up and said, oh, our unit can't take additional take already cut off. I thought that's important for people to hear because quite often this is that simply cut more than others, right? Others can take more cuts. If you're in various units, then you get the idea of, oh yeah, this is a broader impact here. I think that's value, I guess. We need the input from the panel that they're comfortable providing up through the vice chancellors, obviously me directly. That's why I share those comments that both Michael Dunning doesn't say that most people want to credit. So that's long winded there called like anything else. But Julie's back there, she's just thankful I just didn't direct them all over.
All right, everybody, we'll try and get our mics back. In the meantime,
the mic should be back.
Yeah, okay, great, thank you. So let's circle back. So new business, we have an item here amended for a discussion about shared governance. In March, at the March Board of Regents meeting in Anchorage, the board had solicited governance folks to had convened our governance system-wide governance representatives to enact a discussion about shared governance and the shared governance process at a system-wide level. Okay. And so, I think most of you are aware of it. For those who aren't, you know, we as staff council officers are also participants in a system-wide governance group on Staff Alliance, and that Staff Alliance group communicates directly with the board, with president. Faculty has an equivalent group, the Faculty Alliance at the system-wide level. Tara Smith from University of Alaska Anchorage is the presiding officer of that group. So those of us officers at those system-wide groups are part of a agenda item at the March Board of Regents meeting about generally how shared governance is constructed, how it operates, the decisions that it was making. I guess I would observe that, in my opinion, that was a discussion that was prompted, was an agenda item that was prompted by the faculty senates at UAA and UAF, votes of no confidence in Ms. Johnson and to some extent in the pathways process. The attached document is 280-7. That attachment is, that was shared from the president's office to the board, and it was used to structure that conversation at the Board of Regents meeting. So I just want to emphasize that we did not take part. We got this document, governance groups got this document, if I remember correctly, days, if not hours, before the meeting. So there was just not a lot of, we certainly weren't solicited for input into the document, you know, what the content of it is, and we were not aware of the content for much time. But and I also would say that it was the general counsel, it was the legal team from the president's office, I think, that were both in charge of preparing and also delivering that perspective to the board. And so I guess I just say that for context, Chris, who was here earlier, was part of these discussions at that meeting as well. And I think he made the salient point that there are regulations and there's official language cited in that in those slides, but I think it's fairly limited. And I think that he was able to identify at least a few other places in, if not the University of Alaska's Constitution, then certainly the Board of Regents policy that also make reference to functions that shared governance, and in particular the faculty components of shared governance, serve. All of that said, I think the general point that board was interested in making, and perhaps the president was interested in making as part of this discussion, is that the authority, the official authority of our shared governance groups is limited. And I think that I don't want to say that their purpose was to chasten faculty senates at UAA and UAF, but I think that was for some, I think that was the fact. So I don't think that any of the content in that attachment is erroneous, right? But it is limited, and my perspective, and I tried to stress this at the meeting, is that I think that you can have some fairly robust and meaningful debates, arguments about how much authority our shared governance groups have, and how much authority shared governance as a whole has, and in particular, you know, in terms of decision making, most of that authority resides in the faculty groups in terms of setting curriculum and alignment and accreditation. However, what's most meaningful to me is to have these conversations about how this benefits the university, how the shared governance structure and the functions of shared governance benefits the university, and in particular the Board of Regents and the president. I think at the campus level, I think it's very clear to our chancellor and to his cabinet, of which staff council is part. I think it's very clear to them the benefit and the value that governance has. He communicates, he provides perspective. There's a very strong mutual benefit from with this relationship with our church, and that's not lost on the leadership here. I'm not sure that that's as clear to the board and to the. I meet with the president as the chair of Staff Alliance. I think that he would probably be able to explain in pretty clear ways the benefits that he sees from that kind of direct interaction. I don't think it's as clear to her. I think that that's maybe where there's a little bit of trap. Board is made up of individuals. It doesn't speak with a unified voice or a unanimous voice. So there's probably discrepancy between regents about how involved and how much information is provided, is shared between governance and the board. But a lot of these things were part of that conversation. And I think Regent Anderson was focused on talking about, conflict between the board and faculty in particular is something that he wants to avoid. And I guess what I took that to mean is that he wants his position in the board's position to take here and perhaps even complete presence. Okay. So this is is all just part of context. Maybe I'll pause there and just ask her how matters. So yeah, like I said, I think there's information that's useful in those slides, and I provide them as context for the next item, which is a proposal, or it's a resolution that Jessica suggested we discuss here. A resolution of support for proposed faculty and staff board of regents. Okay, I handed this out earlier. I acknowledge that this is brand new. I think it's brand new. They're going to discuss it and vote on it. They have a version of this for the faculty senate here at UAM. I want to acknowledge that ideally this would not come as an all of a sudden kind of thing. Ideally, this would develop organically through our committee structure, and we would have plenty of time to consider and discuss this before taking any action. However, there's been a lot of pretty frantic work to try and prepare these documents for discussion at our governance meetings today, both staff, council, faculty, and senate. Because I'm not reluctant to say there's actually, I think, some energy amongst some legislators in particular. They're interested in taking some kind, proposing some kind of action at the state level to support them. So having the kind of support from our collective governance groups for that kind of bill is I think, important. We have a staff alliance meeting this week on Wednesday that, if we have support for this kind of thing from UAF, it could also be in terms of establishing similar support at a system level. So, so with that, I just want to open it up. I know that people haven't had a lot of time to review this, but I did hand it out and I shared it online for folks. So if people have comments or questions about it, I'd love to dig into them. Well, if I can't make a motion to do that, but if there's appetite for that here, I think that would be okay. If we can vote on this first to establish UAF support for it initially, then that will, I think, make it more likely that staff alliance is supported as a relevant board. Correct. Well, there are currently 10 board members that are appointed by the governor plus a student. And actually, just a point of clarification, I mean, So no bill has been proposed yet. And so for propriety's sake, there's plenty of details that could still change. But the draft legislation that I've seen, rather than adding board members, it designates two of the existing regents as an active faculty and an active staff member. So the next time that, there are two seats that are due to come open at the end of this term. And so presumably, if this had support amongst the legislature, that those seats would be then designated as, the next two seats that come open would be designated as a staff and a staff.
Just out of curiosity, how old do you
have that? That's a good question. I don't know the answer to it. I can think of at least three student regents in recent history, and they serve, I believe they serve two-year terms. So, at least 6 years. But I imagine it's longer ago than that. I don't know that. I don't believe that the president has that authority. Carrie, I'm sorry. I'm not sure that I would have to look it up. I don't know the authority that the president would have over officers for your government. Even at the system-wide level, I'm not sure if that authority exists, but I could be wrong. No. Good question. I can understand why there. Yeah, that's not exactly clear. The student regent is, I believe that the student governance groups at each of the three MAUs, UAA, UAS, that they each propose they nominate someone from, I don't even think it has to be part of an ASUAF member, but they nominate an individual, and then I believe that the governor selects a student regent from amongst those. Yes. Well, again, many of these details could change before this legislation is proposed, and we're not specific about that in our. We can amend our proposal, but presumably, yes. Presumably, the position, the regional positions that would be redesignated as staff and faculty are currently voting. And I would say for context, that
during that March meeting, during that shared governance discussion at the board meeting in March, there was. The concept of a ex officio member, which is a non-voting member to the Board of Regents, as just a faculty member, was broached, and there was an interest among the board for that.
Nate, I'm just wondering, maybe you said it, but I didn't hear. Is there a collaboration between UAA, UAS, and UAF on this? Are
not
they
yet.
Also presenting resolutions?
Not yet. As I mentioned, this has come together very quickly. Staff counsel's work on this began last week, so I'm acknowledging that this is the first time any of you are seeing this, and I don't know the answer, whether I haven't been in contact with anybody at the other campuses about similar support. But that could certainly happen, especially, I mean, the Alliance meeting on Wednesday, I anticipate this being a topic of conversation there. Yeah.
And I'm assuming this will require a change to state law to get another region on?
Correct.
Do we have a partner in legislature that was interested in pushing?
It wouldn't be appropriate for me to answer that, but I know that there is active and supportive discussion amongst current state representatives. Yeah.
And Nate, you did say that Faculty Senate was going to be voting on this in their meeting this afternoon.
It's on their agenda, yeah.
So we would propose this the idea here is that we would propose this resolution, and then staff Alliance would talk about it and possibly have a similar resolution that would come from the system to the legislature, or is it going to the board?
Yes. I think that, again, the authority that we have here is limited. I think that generally the function of this would be, the purpose of this would be to provide any legislators who are interested in introducing or sponsoring this kind of legislation. So for them to be able to say, we have support from UAF Faculty Senate and Staff Council, perhaps even students. We have support perhaps at, a system-wide, like Staff Alliance level, perhaps Faculty Alliance as well. I presume that would be. I will mention that one sticking point that I anticipate, it certainly hasn't manifested yet, but in comparison to faculty, staff also have a collective governance group at statewide. Okay, so the statewide office, which includes the president and statewide functions, OIT, and so forth, they have their own staff governance group, and I don't have a clear idea for whether, as the chair of Staff Alliance, I guess I feel like that staff governance group should also be represented, as a pool of staff people from which a staff regent would be selected. I don't think that's probably not something that has 100% agreement amongst faculty. Matthew.
So I'm hearing a lot of positive things about this. Are there any drawbacks?
Well, people should feel free to suggest if they see any. I guess from my perspective, the only drawback would be tension with the board. If there are regents who are adamantly against this concept, that might be one downside. Yeah, Sue.
But if the decision is a legislative decision, that really is a moot point.
Right. Right.
So I'm supportive of this, but I can see a situation where that staff person would be in sort of a conflict of interest situation on the Board of Regents voting for something that affected their particular program, and they would probably have to recuse themselves in those kinds of situations. But so that might be one downside. But I think overall, it would be a really good thing if we could accomplish.
I think that's a good point, Sue. I would point out that Board of Regents meetings typically start with declarations of conflicts of interest. I mean, as citizens in the state, I think that there are also frequently situations where board members have to excuse themselves from votes or discussions about particular issues. Yeah.
That wouldn't be a new thing with the student representative.
Correct.
That, I mean, they would be in the same position.
Correct.
Is there any thought on how the person would be selected?
So I'll say that Jeff Benowitz and I have both drafted editorials for the newspapers. And those are based on draft language that identifies a process that's similar to the student regent selection, where we as a campus level staff governance group would nominate, you know, would enter a nomination and other staff councils at UAA and UAS, and perhaps statewide, that's still a point that's unclear, would also provide nominations, and then the governor would appoint the regent from among those nominees.
So I guess I just want to say that I would be in support of this, and so in terms of our next action, that would be a motion or what?
We should have time for people to comment, though, on this online, on the shared document, before we put a vote out, I think. That's just my opinion, unless people don't have any edits to make to it.
Can we edit on the floor? Because aren't we trying to move this along quickly?
Sorry, one second. They are going to amend it at their meeting today. Yeah.
We can amend it on the floor.
Okay. Yep.
I think my biggest question would be in the last line, if we would want to say one faculty member and one staff member to serve as a voting member or not, whether or not we'd want to stipulate that within the resolution.
Yes.
And I don't know if we would, but I think it's worth discussing.
I would support that change.
Okay, so the amendment is to add in the last line of the resolution, one faculty member, one staff member to serve as a voting member?
Is that as voting right? Members.
As voting members.
Members. Okay, yeah. Okay. There was a motion, and did I hear a second?
Second.
Okay. Any objections to that amendment? Sure. Jenny?
You had mentioned that right now there's 10 Board of Regents, and that the proposal would be to eliminate two of those strictly government or governors selected, and they would be staff or faculty. That is not alluded to at all in here.
Correct.
I think it should be clear whether it was an addition to the numbers or capping the numbers at 10. And I think that should be stated in here, because what it does is just the tenor of whether we're trying to take over the regents' meetings versus add to the meetings could be taken one way or another. Personally, I don't think adding two members would be too much.
Mm.
So I would suggest that we state specifically that it would be adding two members to the current 10 versus replacing two with staff and faculty. But I think that's important maybe to have some sense in here of what the intent would be.
Matthew? Nevin? So I take that point. I feel like I feel like this is drafted as it is to be general enough to allow again, the authority to do something like this resides entirely at the state level, legislature, governor. And so identifying those specifics and limitations I think that that's certainly within our purview. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, it's a valid point. So I think that we should discuss it.
Has there always been 10, except for when they added the student member? Like, has this number changed a lot in the past? Do you know?
I don't think it's. Yeah, I can't think of a time when it wasn't at 10.
So adding the student was a pretty big deal. So adding two more might be a pretty big deal as well.
Correct. Yeah, and I would just reiterate that the proposed language that I've seen, rather than adding, it redesignates two of those as.
I think you're going to run into a problem with that because if the governor has appointed these for X amount of time, so their term would have to run out before you could bring them in placement.
There are two regions that whose terms are due to expire.
So it sounds like it's probably going to be a simpler process to just get it redesignated rather than added.
Well, I don't know that. I mean, I don't know that. I mean, I think that, you know, another point, and from my perspective, I'm not a voting member here, so but I would just say, like, perspective-wise, perhaps there would be more support amongst the Board of Regents or the President if they were added rather than redesignated, because, of course, that dilutes the. Or doesn't concentrate, you know, it makes less concentration for those two votes. But of course, that presumes that, you know, a faculty member of the Board of Regents and a staff member of the Board of Regents would be voting together and against the predominant position. So, which I don't think is fair. I'm not sure that it's the best use of our time to get into the details of how this legislation would look. In my view, the resolution is drafted merely to provide support for the concept. But of course, it's staff counsel's job to decide what it supports or does not.
I agree with the support of and let the mechanics be determined, you know, once we get the support for.
Mm-hmm. And like I said before, timing is not an issue. Timing is an issue, but it should not determine, you know, this is an official position of this organization. So, nobody should feel rushed about anything, just with the context that... that there are other contextual pieces moving, including the Faculty Senate.
I mean, I don't know if this makes sense or not, but putting in the clause of where, like, we would like to have the opportunity to comment on any proposed legislation or anything like that, obviously, I'm assuming there would be time to comment, but I don't know if there's some sort of legislative rules where we can just shoot something through. Just putting that in there so at least we can see it and be like, well, you know, these are our ideas and this is what... at that point, and assuming it gets that far, maybe just expressly saying that, like, that opportunity.
Mm.
I don't know if that's necessary or not, but.
Well, you know, Matthew, I think you should certainly feel free to propose an amendment if you think that there's a place in here for that to fit. And from here, I take the point that folks online are disadvantaged in terms of their capacity to participate in this discussion. But at this point, I guess I would just say that we can continue discussion, we can table this, or we can close the discussion and vote or not. Yeah, Carrie.
I would move that since this is just a resolution in support, that all we're doing is just letting
other powers that be know that they have our support behind the scenes, that we go ahead and I would move to vote on this as amended.
I would second that.
Second, okay. Okay, any objections? Okay. All right, well, we'll vote. Chris, okay. Chris, you object to closing the discussion and voting, or do you are you voting prematurely? Okay. All right, noted. Oh, sorry, I guess I still don't really understand. Okay. Chris, please, if you have a point to make, again, apologies for the difficulties with the audio system here today, but if you don't mind giving us some idea, if there's a point that you'd like to make, please do so.
And as Chris is typing his thing, if I'm not mistaken, the kind of rush at this point is just that the legislature like close. I mean, I think they're supposed to end on April 15th,
right.
But obviously they'll probably go over to the budget stuff. Like we won't. It's potential that this legislature will be out of session by the time we meet again, potentially. So, and by the time we meet again and get something through, the legislators may not have any appetite to propose anything for the May vacancy. So.
And faculty senate's voting on it today, right?
Correct. I mean, we anticipate it, yeah.
And staff alliance meets Wednesday.
Correct. Hey, Chris. We can hear you. We can hear you, yeah.
Okay. Okay, you can hear me. I won't be able to hear you for a moment. This meeting has been atrocious. I'm sorry, trying to follow. The audio has been really, really poor. I couldn't even understand some of the things that a lot of other people in the room were saying. So I don't want to delay anything, but I would like to have the opportunity to revisit the subject at our next meeting and have a little time to hold a discussion, and then, go for a vote at that time.
Okay, well, I think there's some time constraints on that, Chris. I don't know if you can hear me or not. Can we type to him, maybe? I don't know. That might be better.
Whoever that was talking, I may not understand at all.
Maybe they can't maybe hear the things that we talked about with faculty senate.
Hey, it's because you're not using your mic.
Okay.
Yeah, it's too much with the whole meeting pretty much. So I've missed a lot of it. It's simply because I didn't follow and understand what the topic was.
You may wish to voice that with OIT.
Yeah, Chris, can you hear me now?
Yeah,
we don't. I'm sorry, Chris. We just don't have any. There's nothing we can do to make any corrections at this point. I think that this is what we got.
Maybe we could type that to him to let him know that as well.
Okay.
Both the time issue and that there's nothing that can be done with the audio.
Yeah. So Chris, just in case you can understand, I think even in a limited way, what I'm trying to stress, and of course, I would reiterate that there's nothing mandated here, and I'm not trying to apply any pressure to this group. That's not my role. I'm just providing some context that Faculty Senate is taking action, or they hope to take action on this today at their meeting, and we have a staff alliance meeting on Wednesday that, if staff counsel at UAF is interested in supporting this, that it might make a difference in terms of whether Staff Alliance at a system-wide level supports this effort. So, again, notwithstanding any of the issues, and I think that we're all frustrated with the technical difficulties, and I'm sure that folks online are at the far end of the spectrum in terms of that frustration. But you know, there are other variables in the mix in terms of timing, and as Matthew correctly points out, the next time we meet, a month down the road, the legislative context, calendar context, will have changed.
Yes, it was. Didn't you send it out, right? You sent it out.
I have shared this with everyone, yeah.
I didn't see it in my email. It was this morning.
It's not on the agenda. I shared a Google Doc, basically as this meeting was getting started. I can copy everybody individually. I sent it to her.
I see it. Okay. I don't see it in my email.
Are you sending it again, Nate?
I think Nicole is going to reshare it.
I think because they haven't had time to read it, that it's not necessarily appropriate for us to vote on it at the meeting, but I think that maybe we could do an electronic vote by the end of the day if Nicole could send out a ballot. Would that be possible?
It would be possible.
Yeah. But again, if once Nicole sends it out, I think it'd be very easy for them to read it really fast, and we could still vote on it without having to go into an electronic.
But they haven't been able to hear our discussion at all either. I don't want to put people who are online at a disadvantage for the voting and considering that issue. And yeah.
I think that that's appropriate, Jessica. I think that it's.
But I think we could vote on it by the end of the day. Like, I think that would be fine.
Okay. Well, I think that that's. I mean, personally, I have no problems with that. I think a motion to table and to conduct a vote once folks online have had a chance to read it. Is that just what you're moving?
Yeah. Are you okay, Nicole, sending out a ballot today?
I can't do that. I'm in meetings all day. I can get it after Faculty Senate. So it'll be around 4. I can try to get it in between, but I can't guarantee.
Okay.
We've got audio issues to deal with in the way.
Because I don't think we're proposing that people can edit it. We're just proposing that people have time to read it before we're making them vote on it.
And that we support it or not support it.
Right. That's all we're saying is, do we support this resolution or do we not support this resolution?
As amended. So
amended, right.
Yeah, so I think what, just presiding over the discussion, I think probably what we need, because there was an objection before, I think we need a motion and a second to close the discussion and conduct a vote online on the resolution as amended. So is there a motion to close and vote online?
I motion that we close and vote online, but if people can object to that motion as well.
Of course.
You might want to say it again for those online that the amendment is in the last bullet, that the faculty, one faculty and one staff member as a voting member on the UAF or the University of Alaska Board of Regents. That's not going to show. Did you guys catch that?
It's been made.
Oh, it's been made. Okay, never mind.
I'll second the motion.
Thank you. Any objections?
I'll object.
Okay.
Only because it's just a motion of support. Excuse me?
You moved to the previous order, like the previous question, to make the debate go back to.
She's objecting to closing the discussion. Not voting right now.
Right, but we still have a motion on the floor to close debate, which we have to actually vote on. Mm-hmm. One person opposing it doesn't stop the vote.
Mm-hmm.
Once that's done, then we can go back to the previous original motion.
Correct. I guess Chris's objection and Carrie's objection are equivalent. I think we just had a there was a redundant motion, I guess. So Matthew's right that we had a motion and a second to close the debate and to vote. Chris objected, so we should vote on whether to close discussion. The difference, though, is now the motion to close and vote was to do it online. So I think that objections were made for different reasons. So it was my mistake to have a redundant motion. We should have voted in the first place. But just so everybody's clear, the vote that we're going to do now is to close discussion and to vote here. That's the motion on the floor. Yes. On the resolution.
As amended.
As amended. Thank you.
And because it's a two-thirds majority, are you going to do a roll call?
I think that we need to.
Okay.
The vote is no, Chris, for...
So Chris, this is a vote on the motion to close the discussion here and to vote right now on the resolution as amended. A vote for this motion will enact a vote on the resolution right now as amended. I think we have to do a roll call.
That's the vote, right?
Yes. Roll call vote.
Chad Olson? Teresa Quinner, who I don't think was able to log in. Carrie Santoro?
So a yes. A yes vote says it's okay to close the discussion and vote now. A no vote says
keep it going. A no vote continues the discussion. So if a person's goal is to vote online, then you should vote no. If a person's objective is to vote here now, then you should vote yes.
So that was a yes for me.
Okay, thanks.
Brianna?
Yes.
Leslie?
Yes.
Alda? Thanks. Joseph? Sue?
No.
Suzanne? Not here. Wendy? Thanks, Wendy. Chris, I'm gonna assume that was his vote already. Okay. Matthew?
Yes.
Katie? I think she left. China?
Yes.
Kathy?
Yes.
Susie? Susie Fry? Jessica Armstrong?
No.
Thanks, Susie. I'm sorry, Jessica Armstrong?
No.
Thanks. Emily?
Yes.
Okay. Jenny?
No.
Dean?
Oh, yes.
Jessica Allard?
No.
Kimberly Clinton? I don't think she's here. Alexander?
No.
Lena?
Yes.
Janelle?
No.
Amanda?
Yes.
Melissa? Thanks, Melissa. Hillary?
No.
And Karina? Anybody whose name I didn't call? So I have 14 for yes and 10 for no.
Okay. I think that means it does not pass. Right? Isn't it two-thirds?
Oh, we need two-thirds?
Yeah. For ending the debate.
Okay. All right. So the motion does not carry. But now I think what we need to, if I'm reading the room correctly, I think that what we need to do now is, if there's appetite for it, for a motion to close discussion and to vote online.
I would like to make a motion to close discussion and vote online.
Thank you, Jessica.
Okay.
Second. Okay. So we're going to do this again with the understanding that a yes vote closes, and we'll have a vote ensuring that everybody's, you know, seen the document, everybody online has a chance to review it, and that we'll vote online today. So that's a yes vote, and a no vote is to keep the discussion open.
Can I just have a question?
Sure.
Is there a way to have this discussion online so that the people online can send in some questions?
Yes. Yeah. So I, as presiding officer, I guess what I would propose is that, you know, the comment as it's been the document as it's been shared now has been shared with commenting privileges open, and so. I feel that if people have, whether it's online or people in the room, if you have additional thoughts or concerns about this, feel free to enter them as comments on the document. But the understanding, as the motion that exists on the floor now, is for a vote on this resolution as amended currently.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, feel free to ask questions and stuff. But there's not really a if the goal is to vote on this today, there's not really a tool available to us to make further amendments to it. I think that we have to regard it as this document as amended currently.
I wanted to give them a chance to, you know, actually ask a question and have it.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a good point, Jenny. Okay. So we had a motion. Do we have a second?
2 seconds.
Seconded? Okay, great. So I think we need to do another roll call.
And this is a motion to...
Motion to close and vote online.
Would it make sense to add a specific time and date to that?
Does somebody want to propose a deadline for people's votes?
4 p.m. today.
Well, Nicole wasn't sure what time she'd be able to send it out, so I think that we should say maybe by 8 a.m. tomorrow morning or something like that, so that, you know, I don't... Is that?
Do you want to say what time is reasonable to expect for a deadline?
I don't think I'm going to get it done between the meetings, just because
we've
got a mess to deal with. But
noon tomorrow.
Noon tomorrow.
Yeah, noon tomorrow shouldn't be a problem at all. But does that give you guys enough time?
Well, yeah. I'm just wondering. So noon tomorrow as a deadline for voting.
Yes.
For everybody here to vote, not when it will be posted, but when everybody's had a chance to review and vote on it. Sent out by 5 p.m. today?
Okay. Should be, yeah.
Is that reasonable?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. With that understanding as context, a vote, I guess I'd, you know, I would like to amend the motion. I can't really do that.
Yep.
But
yep. I amend my motion, but we will vote by noon tomorrow.
Okay. All right.
Second.
Thank you, Leslie. All right. Roll call.
All right. Chad?
Yes.
Carrie?
Yes.
Brianna?
Yes.
Leslie?
Yes.
Alda? Alda Norris? Thanks. Sue?
Yes.
Wendy? Thanks, Wendy. Chris? Thanks, Chris. Matthew?
Yes.
China?
Yes.
Kathy?
Yes.
Susie? Thanks. Jessica Armstrong?
Yes.
Emily Nelson?
Yes.
Jimmy Campbell?
Yes.
Dina Jala?
Yes.
Jessica Allard?
Yes.
Alexander Chisholm?
Yes.
Lena Krutikoff? Janelle Merrifield?
Yes.
Amanda Wall?
Yes.
Melissa Campbell? Thanks. Ellery Miner?
Yes.
Karina Gonzalez?
Yes.
Passed unanimously.
Terrific. That's great. That's fantastic. All right. All right, great. Okay, I acknowledge that we're over. Does anybody have any questions about what just happened and what our responsibilities are between now and this time tomorrow? No? Okay. Thank you. So I'm acknowledging that we're over time already, but we do have two quick items that are important to cover. One of them is Leslie's amendment to the agenda, so I'll turn it over to Leslie right now.
Okay, last week the Staff Health Care Committee met, and the Joint Health Care Committee voted down adding what was called EDICOR, which was a pre-approval system for outpatient rehabilitation, and was then tasked with how can we incentivize or encourage the staff to utilize the regular checkups or Healthy Roads or the patient services, which is now called Direct Path, which is where you can, if you have facing an imaging or a surgery, where you get a hold of them and say, okay, where's the best price place to go? They're all going to be in network. They're not going to be cut rate doctors or anything like that to, A, save you money in your portion of it, but in the long run save money towards the university's cost. We are looking for ideas from the staff. So I really need, I'm going to send out a little poll, but this is going to go back to the JCC for their first round of discussion on the 10th. I need to have, if you can talk to your people, any wild idea, let's hear it. Because this is, we managed to keep the cost this year the same. Thank God we didn't have a lot of high dollar claims. There are a couple of things that did not happen, such as the best doctors did not get renewed. They are implementing a program for mothers that are of high risk pregnancies, a support system, which is not cost to them, but to hopefully help bring down the cost in the long run of the birth and in the NICU units too. So these mothers have some support and are not, overwhelmed with everything that they have to do. Okay, hopefully I'll get this out to you, but it will probably be tomorrow morning. But yeah, talk to everybody in your office. Is there something that would make you more willing to be more health conscious about where you go, what you spend, and how you do it? And, in some ways, this may end up being money back in your pocket. There's something floating around out there that's a really good idea. They just can't bring it down to, let's talk about it to real life level, because they haven't worked out the mechanics of it. But it's a great idea, folks. Let's hope this comes out. That's all I can say. But definitely use patient services or whatever it's called now, because that is a great way to save you money out of your pocket. And it's not, and mainly it's imaging. Imaging is an outrageous use in this town, and there are many locations that will do it, and a lot of price differential between the locations that will do it. This is your MRIs, your CAT scans, those types of situations. And 9 times out of 10, it's not an emergency, I have to have it done right now situation. So take advantage of it, save yourself some money, and let me know what you guys think.
So I do have a question about the usage of it and whether or not that's kind of going into whether or not being cut. Was Best Doctors cut because it wasn't being used?
Best Doctors was not being utilized. Best Doctors was where you would send them your case information, and they would take it to, you know, higher level doctors to give you, you know, make sure you're getting the best plan. No, it was not being utilized. That's why they decided not to renew the contract.
So, I mean, I know of like a couple of people in my department that have used it, so that's kind of interesting to me. Just knowing, like, okay, university-wide, the service is really not being used, it's on the chopping block. It'd be nice if people know that before it gets cut.
They did let us know in the email that went out from Erica last week. It's in what you need to know about the changes of your health plan.
Well, I know we're informed that the changes already occurred.
No, it's not going to get cut until June 30th.
Right. But it's already been decided that it's going to be cut.
Yeah.
Like, we were never, like, informed that, okay, guys, this isn't being used. You know, I don't know. Like, I feel like that's half of a kind of, people know they're going to lose something, then maybe they'll take a little more chance to, like, oh, maybe I should actually look at that.
Yeah. They've had it in place for 5 years, and it has cost a tremendous amount of money with very little utilization.
Yeah.
So.
Still understandable, but, I mean, it was a nice service, so.
A patient services is a good thing to get to know. Actually, it's direct path. They just changed names. They didn't change anything about it. But the cost savings and let you know what's out there is absolutely completely, like, say, the first one had knee surgery. She utilized that and saved herself probably $5,000 to $10,000. Just from, you know, finding out who does what. And they say they're all top-notch doctors. It's not like, you know, you say you're not going to go to, you know, Jose in the backyard kind of situation.
Of course.
They're all in-network doctors. But imaging seems to be a big thing that costs a lot of money and is heavily utilized in this system.
Terrific. Okay. Thanks, Leslie. I appreciate that. Okay. In the home stretch here, I guess I would like, if there's appetite for it, I would like to push our unfinished business to table it for next meeting, aside from two quick things. First thing is officer elections, which will occur in May. Okay. The nomination period remains open. Please consider running. Please consider nominating. All right. Neither, this might be news, but as Samara noted in her report, neither of us will be able to run for another term in May. I mean, we could, but we're not going to. So we need two strong officers for staff council, and I can think of a bunch of people in this room and online that would be terrific candidates, and I'm happy to nominate anybody, But please think about that, because as Tamara noted, this is one of the few, and I would argue is the best, you know, leadership development programs that staff have available to us. And so while it is a sacrifice of time and energy, I certainly think that it's worth it. Okay. So I would recommend it to anybody, and I would be happy to sit down or pick up the phone to talk about any of this experience with anybody and to empower and to arm anybody that's interested in serving in the role.
And the nominations are on the staff council website, and people can nominate themselves, correct?
Correct. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And that nomination period, I mean, the earlier you nominate, the better, because, you know, we want to have a thorough and robust discussion of and presentation by nominees at the May meeting, but it remains open up to and including that meeting time. Okay. So that's that. Second thing, Achievement Award?
Thank you to those who submitted nominations. That will be announced at the next staff council meeting. It does not require technology to be presented.
Great. And so that's everything. I would suggest, I mean, I am loath to hop over committee reports if there's anything that committee chairs feel is particularly important or relevant to reflect. It sounds like we'll be having some robust online interactions over the next 24 hours. So please consider pushing that information out if there are points you'd like to highlight. But if there are no objections, I would like to table the rest of our unfinished business and committee-based issues to next meeting and invite invite any announcements. If there are no announcements, I guess I'd like to move to a quick roundtable session. I want to give people the opportunity to raise any red flags.